welcome everyone to the Conscious Business Telesummit. This is Adela Rubio, your host, and I'm really excited to have Melanie Benson-Strick with us here today. And we're going to be talking about the little-known enemy of entrepreneurs that kills your business growth. But before we get started, we're just going to take a moment just to really bring ourselves to the present, take a nice deep breath, take a little break from your day, whatever it is that you've been doing, just stand for a moment. Feet hip-width apart, knees soft, shoulders relaxed. And just become aware of your intention around this call, what you'd like to glean from the conversation today, and open up to the possibility that you'll get plenty of content that you can go out and implement, even if it's one or two things. So I suggest that you have a pen and a pad handy, and now you just imagine that we're sitting around, you know, like a couch and just having a great conversation. And as questions arise for you, make sure that you submit them in the webcast so that we can help you out specifically. And just know that whatever you're ready to hear is yours and that you're going to get something on this call that's just for you. So thank you, everyone. Melanie, I'm really excited to have you here.
Thank you. Wow, it's like I don't get to participate in too many teleconferences or events where someone actually kind of sets an intention and gets everybody's energy prepared to learn. That's so great.
Thank you.
I guess that's the part of the conscious business, right?
Yeah, it is. And most of the folks that attend the Conscious Business Telesummit are people that are up for a new way of doing business. And so that's why I'm especially excited to have you with us today. Because I know that your area of expertise and your breadth and depth of experience with entrepreneurs is extraordinary. So I'm really excited to have you here. And I know that today we're going to be covering like one of the missing links from business growth strategies that's really, really important and that's going to separate the seven-figure businesses from everyone else. And it's this one thing that's going to propel you forward. So, folks, you know, hang on to your hats because Melanie's going to go here. I'm very excited to have Melanie Benson-Strick with us today. She's the CEO of Success Connections. And she spent the last 9 years working with thousands of entrepreneurs to build thriving six- and seven-figure businesses that are scalable, profitable, and enjoyable. And we're actually going to be getting into those specifics in this call. After 2 years of running her own company, Melanie realized that most entrepreneurs create a job rather than a company, and they actually wind up working harder than they have ever imagined with minimal results. So frustrated and overwhelmed, they get stuck, and they never actually experience the freedom that they crave. And so we're going to dive right into that and explore those topics today. Melanie is a lifestyle enthusiast and spends her free time in search of the best spas and beaches in the world.
It's part of the freedom thing.
Yeah. You know, it's so crazy because I was just saying this yesterday to one of my colleagues because I'll confess, I think I'm probably in this place here where I feel I work really, really hard and I do have freedom in certain things, but not the kind of freedom that I imagined, I think. And so I know that you've noticed this, you know, this trend with entrepreneurs, and it actually kills their business growth. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about this and see where we go.
Well, let's just dig right in, and I'm going to come back to that thing that you just talked about, where you're working all the time, you're feeling overwhelmed, because I certainly have been there too. But there's something that maybe even a second enemy of entrepreneurs, and we'll come back to that in a minute because I think that's a really juicy point too. But, you know, I love this idea that we're all going to be connected here. Imagine that we're sitting in a lobby of a hotel. Maybe we're at a live event. This happens all the time, and that's part of why I go to events, because it's what you learn in those experiences that can really transform your business. And I feel so blessed to be speaking at most of these events and have the opportunity to learn not just from the people who attend, but from other experts who are in six and seven figures about what's kind of getting in the way for them. Because we all have it. You know, if you ever hear an entrepreneur say everything's peaches and cream, run the other way because it's a lie. It doesn't happen. It's like we all have our demons. We all have our crap. And the truth is, we all have stuff that doesn't work, and we all have stuff that we do really well. And, you know, one of the things that I've seen that's You know, I would say even when I started my business, in the very beginning, I was just so hungry to learn anything. You know, I had left corporate America, and all I knew was corporate marketing, corporate business growth, corporate team building. All I knew was how do you create a Fortune 500 company? Well, I don't know how to create it, but, you know, how you run a Fortune 500 company, because that's what I'd been entrenched with for probably close to 14 years. I'd worked for Motorola. I'd worked for Mobil Oil. I'd worked for Loral Instrumentation. So I had a significant amount of big business knowledge behind me, but and by the way, I am actually that old. People look at my picture and go, "How can you be that old that you work for that many companies?" Yes, I am that old. But you know, that's beside the point. What I found was that I was really confused about how to translate that kind of knowledge into my business. And so here I'm trying to do things the way you do in corporate America, and I was failing miserably. So I was hungry. It's like I was willing to learn whatever I needed to learn. I was willing to invest anything I needed to invest in the right mentors, the right training, and the right knowledge to get the outcome I want. Because my brain at that point was focused on, you have to break six figures. And when you're in that place, it's really important to be humble. To not think you know it all, to not, you know, but this is me, and I'm just sharing what worked for me. I really had to be willing to say, uncle, just point me in the right direction. And one of the big things that I learned was that you cannot focus on the mastery. You have to have marketing savviness to make it a success. So I followed that doctrine, Adele, for many years. Like, get good at marketing. Become the master of marketing. Do whatever it takes to get your marketing out there in a way that pulls people in. And I got really good at marketing. I brought in experts. As a matter of fact, Michelle PW is one of the experts on my team for many years. And, you know, so I pulled all these people in. And what I found is that at a certain point, marketing's not enough. And I'm going to invite you to write this down, this saying that says, a strength overused becomes your greatest weakness. I'm going to say it again. A strength overused becomes your greatest weakness. And what happens for many entrepreneurs, and you know, I fortunately was surrounded by a lot of people that would help me overcome, you know, kind of avoid this area. But what I saw was that a lot of people began to get so good at marketing, and or they came from the marketing world and they led with their marketing energy that was a strength for them, that they began to overuse it. And what they did was they over relied on bringing in leads to the detriment of serving their clients. And what happens, and I've seen it happen over and over and over again, is that you get so good at driving the leads in the door and closing people, as they say in the industry, getting the sale, that you don't have the right mechanisms in place to sustain the growth you're working so hard to build. And this is not something that is easily seen when you're in the midst of it. We've all probably experienced that point in time in our life where a blind spot whacks us upside the head. Well, as I'll tell you, kind of my part of this was that when I was really focused on the marketing, unfortunately, what happens is that sometimes you don't focus as much on other parts of your business. So I outsourced to other people to make sure that the parts of my business that needed to be, you know, kept up to speed were there. But as I started to work with higher-end clients, I realized that many people weren't doing that. They weren't doing what needed to be in place to keep it in balance. And so, you know, the truth of what happens is we get brainwashed to believe that all we have to do is get really good at marketing and we'll be able to create six or seven-figure businesses. And I heard a story one time, and I cannot say for sure this is true, but legend has it that a very, very well-known marketing guru, a sales copywriting expert who's no longer with us, got really clever and made up a slogan that it said, it's the marketing, not the mastery.
Yeah,
because he knew that he would sell more products and services if people really believed that marketing was the thing they had to invest all their money in. And so I see, tragically, people dumping all their money into marketing, dumping all their money into learning how to get more leads. But when this happens and things start to kick off, then all of a sudden they're in pain and in turmoil and overwhelmed and challenged with the fact that they're losing so much business because it's like a sieve. There's not a strong enough container to hold it. And now I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression here. There's one last thing I want to say before we move on, and that is marketing has to be in place. You have to have excellent marketing strategies. I'm not saying you don't, especially when you're in phase one of your business growth. It is essential to get traffic in the door, because if you have a great product or program and you don't have the marketing, you still will not be successful. What I'm talking about here is over-relying on one conduit for business growth at the expense of keeping the clients happy that you're bringing in.
Awesome. Yeah, I've got a number of questions already, but I one of the main questions that I have, you're already alluding to these four phases of business growth. I'd love for you to share with us, what are those four phases of business growth?
Well, there are four key ones, and different people break them up differently. I like to look at them this way. Technically, there's three, but the fourth one is actually what happens before you get into business,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people don't understand that they are in this kind of what we call a pre-phase of business, and so they're confused about why they're not getting results. And let me just pre-frame for a minute. This is why you need to know what stage of business growth you're in, because what you focus your time, money, and energy on will be drastically different at each phase of business. That's reason number one. Reason number two is, if you're in one phase of business and you're comparing yourself or modeling yourself after someone at a different phase of business growth, you will be frustrated, angry, and overwhelmed with your process, because you won't understand why what they're doing isn't working for you. Why am I working so hard to have this when it's really easy for that person, or you think it's really easy for that person, but you're not getting traction with it? It's because you're at different phases of your business growth. So that's why I like to point this out, is because when you understand these different phases, then you can get traction and you can strengthen your business growth quickly. So here's the four phases. The first, what we call the pre-phase, is the seed phase of growth. And that's where you have an idea, but you don't have a business yet. You don't necessarily know how you're going to charge for things. You don't have your services mapped out. You don't have your marketing collateral mapped out. So you're really at the pre-phase. You're not making any money with anything. It's an idea, and you're in the process of wrapping around it all the elements of what you need to do to grow. So that's pre-phase. Then we move to the startup phase. The startup phase is when you've got your core elements in place. You have your marketing materials, you've got a website, you have a pretty clear direction you're going with your offerings. You have started to get your message in front of your marketplace. And now you're in that rapid, like, okay, this is ascension time. We've got to really get moving. We've got to bring on clients. We've got to start funding the business. And so the startup phase is really where a lot of new things are happening, a lot of testing is happening, and a lot of figuring out what's going to work and what's not work. Then you move into growth phase. And growth phase is when you have tested and tracked enough to know what's going to work, and you're heavily investing in doing the right things. This is a really tricky phase for a lot of people, because in growth phase, we tend to over-rely on the things we did in startup phase,
mm-hmm.
and not realizing we've grown out of it, kind of like growing out of the toddler phase. You know, you're not really going to be hobbling around and, you know, using your training wheels anymore. You're going to be on the big boy bike or the big girl bike, and, you're in movement. And this is where I'm really talking to people who are making that transition from startup to growth phase. You are going to be experiencing rapid acceleration of every area of your business. And it's an exciting place because you know everything's working, but it's also a little scary because things blow up as fast as you get them handled. And so there tends to be a lot of breakdowns and a lot of things not working right. And then the fourth phase, Adele, is a maintenance phase. And honestly, I don't know many entrepreneurs that ever make it to this phase, because we are so hooked on creativity and we are so hooked on, you know, kind of like the newness phase of life, that we will oftentimes go back and forth between startup and growth all the time because we're constantly adding new things.
Mm-hmm.
But maintenance phase would be a business that's hit maturity. It has a lot of what they call market share. It does very well with its core offerings, and it's getting comfortable. You know, the business owner and maybe even the core group of people that lead this company, they've moved into a phase where things just aren't that hard to manage anymore. It's just like everything's on even keel. And again, I think most entrepreneurs get bored there, so we either blow it up or we figure out a way to, you know, make things move in new directions. So Those are the core four phases. And again, I'm really talking to people who are bouncing between startup and growth phase today. It's important to know at the seed phase because you want to have great strategies, but you don't necessarily want to, you're going to have a whole new set of challenges or a whole different set of priorities at that phase of the game.
So how do, I'm kind of already finding myself here, how do you figure out which phase you're in? What are the signposts?
I think there's a couple of things. And I outlined some of this, and I know there was a gift that you made available to everybody, the CEO Factor Manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have it yet, I'll make sure everybody knows how to get access to it at the end of the call today. But the way you really start to understand what phase of business you're in has everything to do with how many clients you have, like where you're at with your revenue, and, you know, to be quite honest, where your business is at in terms of its growth cycle, meaning are you focused on new stuff? Are you focused on sustaining what you have? And are you, you know, do you have the elements in place to truly support the growth you have? We're going to talk a lot about more about that today, but one of the things I think is really important to remember here is that if you are in the seed stage of business, you absolutely have to stay hyper-focused, like really diligent about making sure that you are getting your marketing and your core offerings really tight, which is not what you need to be doing in startup phase. In startup phase, you're refining. You don't want to keep creating new stuff in the startup phase. You want to be looking at how do I get what I have to the marketplace and making money. So, you know, a big part of this is starting to recognize what's our real role at each phase of the business. Our role, Adele, at the seed phase is probably doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
If we're really lucky and we've made a smart choice and we've capitalized our growth like many, more what we might call brick-and-mortar businesses might do, we will have had capitalization and so we can bring support on early in the process. But most people at the seed stage and even at the startup phase are really doing things on their own. And they're actually missing what their real role is. So that's a really big part of it. But, you know, I think the other part of it is really recognizing when it's time to switch gears from the different focus points of your growth strategy. Like I said before, of course, in the first two phases, you're going to market a lot. You have to get your marketing really tight, and it makes sense to make that a big focus. But when you move from startup to growth and growth to maintenance, if you are focusing on marketing alone, you are killing your profits. And unfortunately, I've seen a lot of businesses do this, and many of them come to me for the support phase of like, okay, Melanie, how do we get more freedom in my life? And so this is where I wanted to come back to what you were saying earlier. When we find that we're working way more than we wanted to in our business, there's a couple of things that are probably happening. One, we're maybe scrambling to keep up with our overused creator, you know, that creative entrepreneur in us tends to want to do a lot of things at once. And I don't know about you, Adele, but I've noticed, and I have this tendency too, that we get our sights on something and we think, oh my gosh, I can get that done. I can make that happen. And next thing you know, you've got 17 projects on your plate and they're all like they're all like colliding and everything's on top of each other.
Don't make me laugh. This is, you're talking about me.
you know what's funny is people will write me and go, have you been spying on me? No, it's because you're an entrepreneur. This is what we do.
Yeah, I'll bet you you're singing a lot of people's song on this call, too. A lot of other folks are totally relating to this. Yeah, so there.
Well, and one other thing before you go on is I wanted to point out, you were saying that, like, that dream of the lifestyle. You know, one of my biggest aha moments in my business came at about 2 years in, and I was in that place. I was working my butt off. I worked every day. I worked long days every day. My family, my niece was probably about 4 at this point, and she would, you know, want me to come over and play or want to come over and play, and I'd be like, I can't. My family would invite me over for dinner. My friends would invite me out, and it's like, oh, my gosh, I've got this deadline. And it hit me one day. I mean, I was so grumpy, Adele. I was like, nobody wanted to be around me. And I'm like, what is wrong with me? I left corporate America so I could actually have a life.
Mm-hmm.
I worked like that when I was in corporate America. I didn't want to work like this for myself. And what I realized was is that I had lost touch of my bigger why. And when you lose touch with your bigger why and you forget what it was that motivated you to start your business in the first place, it's really easy to get sucked into getting out of balance or becoming the workaholic again. So I learned, and I'll talk more about this when we get into the different elements of a successful business owner, but one of the things I realized was is that I stopped having the vision of my freedom. All I had was the vision of my business hitting six figures. So my freedom goals had gotten put smushed down at the expense of my business growth goals. So one of the ways I shifted out of that was I made a goal to go travel in Europe for a month. And within 12 months, I did it.
Wow, that's a beautiful distinction.
Yeah, and so we'll talk more about that, but that has a lot to do with how you really choose to grow your, you know, put your growth foundation in place.
Yeah, and you know, I've got to think of it as a trap because it's something that it's income oriented, and it's something that seems essential when you're first, you know, when your business is really starting to move. You're like, you're feeling the momentum, things are working, you've figured out the marketing, you've figured out your message, and you feel almost like you're on a runaway train, that you can't kind of let it go. Because you've got this target that you're so set on, and
yeah,
you can lose sight of that bigger vision that you have.
Yeah, you know, and it's one of the most exciting and rewarding parts of the work I do with people. And actually, a couple of years ago, I did a retreat around this because I found that so many people who are making that leap beyond six figures, maybe they're making the leap from five to six, maybe they're okay, they've got their sights set on seven figures, but they're not getting traction, I realize is because they're using the same strategies they used in the startup phase to go into growth phase. And so they were failing miserably and not getting traction and kind of hitting their head against the wall over and over and over again because it was so hard. And it's like that rat wheel.
Mm-hmm.
That you're just running in circles because what you're doing isn't working. And I like to call it influence, you know, starting to infuse the CEO factor. You literally have to start seeing your business with a new set of glasses. It's almost like, you know, when you go to the movies, have you ever watched the, you know, the 3D movies and
yeah,
they give you those funky little glasses? It's like there's a special set of glasses if you really want to sustain your growth at the seven figures or even get to six figures. You've got to start looking at your business from a totally new point of view. You cannot run your business and grow your business with startup techniques. You have to move to growth and maintenance techniques. And so that's what I'm really excited to talk about today are some of those techniques.
So wonderful. So can you share with us some of those elements of the savvy six- and seven-figure business owner?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Let's talk about those. The first one, and I already started to allude to this a little bit, is what I call the growth foundation. Now, again, if you have a CEO Factor Manifesto, I go into this in great detail in there, but I'm going to kind of cover the highlight here, and that is a growth foundation is having a clearly defined set of values that begin to kind of set the tone for the culture of the business you're growing. Now, it's going to be important. I'll explain this in a minute, but it's also tying that to the vision that you hold for your business and not just the vision of your financial success, but it's like you want to think about your lifestyle and your legacy too.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two pieces that most people don't ever connect to. They don't connect to their lifestyle picture. They just start running in their business and next thing you know, they have no life. As a matter of fact, there's a story that I can share with you about some clients that I worked with who ran a training company. And they're very, very successful. They hit six figures in their first year of business, and that's pretty freaking fantastic. Like, not many people can do that. But what happened was it was at the expense of them having any kind of life whatsoever because they literally worked every day. And by the time they got to me, they were completely burned out.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was about ready – they were partners, and one of them was about ready to have a meltdown. They were arguing a lot. And they were still experiencing some cash challenges, some cash flow challenges, even though they were making six figures, because they were bringing the money in, but they weren't sustaining the clients they brought in as well as they'd like. So they were having a hard time really getting the rest of the business kind of mapped out and grown to support it. And they were so hyper-focused on getting the leads in the door. So one of the things that we worked on, Adele, was how to basically transition their workflow away from just being lead-centric, or what I call marketing-centric, to be able to bring forward a stronger foundation. And we'll talk about the foundation in a minute. But they needed to have other elements in place so that it took the pressure off of them to have to do everything in the business, which is why they were working every day. But it's like a little bit of a chicken and the egg thing. You know, because they'd already built it, it was really difficult for them to take a couple steps back and put the right pieces in place, because it meant they had to slow down. And I don't know many entrepreneurs that like to slow down.
No.
So, you know, this is really a big part of Growth Foundation, is be really, really clear about what you want your life and business to look like before you get too far along the path. Otherwise, you're going to work yourself into something that's really hard to shift. So you've got vision. Then we have the culture. So our values start to define how we build and grow, how we're going to support our clients, what becomes the priority, who we hire to become an extension of us. And, you know, Zappos CEO Tony Hsieh, I always want to say Hash, Hsieh, was really great at bringing this to the forefront of our community over the last year. He's really gone and he's blown up a lot of people's paradigms and said, look, you can't afford to hire willy-nilly. You've got to design your company to sustain the growth by having a strong culture. So there's that. There's things like really understanding your real role. So there's a lot of pieces and parts to the Growth Foundation. But when you put this little puzzle together and you integrate it, what happens is you create a steel, strong foundation that allows you to build as big as you want, and it won't collapse. It won't fall apart, and it won't be shaky. So the Growth Foundation is what most people miss, and they avoid it. They short-circuit it, or they just kind of like do a cursory glance at it. And then when they get their growth and they can't understand why everything's breaking down, it's because they don't have their foundation. So that's number one, the Growth Foundation. Number two is to have a truly scalable business model. Okay, so when you have a truly scalable business model, you have a proper set of products, services, and offerings that will allow you to be bigger than just you. Now, some people may say, I don't want that. Well, that may be true right now, but again, based on the way you are in your business, you may only be seeing what's right in front of you. You don't necessarily have the insight into what you want things to look like down the road. If you start with the end in mind and really get yourself clear that there are business models that you can grow, whether you know it's just you and some team members that help you execute, or it's you and an army of people that are getting your mission out there on the planet, the thing is that if you don't have a scalable business model, you also won't deliver consistent, predictable income. So in fact, write that down. Scalable business models are the key to consistent, predictable income. If you do not have that, then you are going to be what we call it's like the up and down syndrome. It's, you know, sometimes you have a lot of money coming in and sometimes you don't, because you're the only one that's moving the business forward. So that's number two, a scalable business model. Number three, I'm sorry, I'm going a little fast. I just know we have so much to get into today, and I want to make sure everybody has a ton of great value here. Number three is infrastructure. Okay, now this might not sound like the sexiest thing we've ever talked about, and I'm going to tell you straight out, it's really freaking hot. You know, it's like it blows sexy out the door when you really get it. No, of course, you know, you're like a Motorola dweeb like I am, and you used to live in big technology. This stuff starts getting fun. But here's why it's fun, because this is what eliminates breakdowns. So that makes it sexy to me. Because if I don't have to go clean up messes and I don't have breakdowns, I get to do what's fun for me. And this right here is your golden key to spending more time doing what you love. If you are missing this, I guarantee you are frustrated because things are breaking down around you. You are not having the right support. You don't have, you know, the resources in place to grow quickly. You can't respond to opportunities the way you'd like. So here's what infrastructure looks like. It's your team. And I'd like to even put out there that it's your stellar A team. It's having the right technology that matches the phase of growth you're in and the needs of your clients at that level, and your team for that matter. It's having systems in place so that when things are in fast motion, people know all they have to do is follow the system and the outcomes are predictable. You know, Michael Gerber was brilliant, I don't know, what was it, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, at bringing out this idea of the e-myth.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you, it works. Now, I don't do it the same way he does it, but I believe that having systems in place are the way in which we make sure that we are guaranteed things to be done right. All right, so that's number three, infrastructure. We have two more to go. Number four, is this good stuff, Adele?
This is awesome stuff, and I've got questions already, but I know there's a lot to cover. Go ahead.
Yeah, we'll make sure we have plenty of time. Number four is a feedback mechanism. Now, if you don't know what a feedback mechanism is or you haven't gotten to that stage of your business, this is perfect because putting it in place right now is going to eliminate so many headaches down the road. A feedback mechanism is how you monitor and measure the important, what I call the pulse points of your business. How you know how much money you have, what programs and products are making you money and which ones are losing you money, which marketing strategies are effective and which ones are you wasting time and money on, what are your customers loving and what are they hating. Feedback mechanisms are really easy to put in place, but often overlooked. And they're the way that you make sure you're keeping the money and becoming more profitable. And I love this part. As a matter of fact, I was mentioning earlier, a retreat I did. It was called the CEO Factor Retreat. And in this retreat, one of the things we talked about was the feedback mechanisms that people have put into their business or not put into their business and what it's costing them. And one of the people that I had in the retreat basically said, Melanie, I have no idea what marketing strategies work. I spend thousands of dollars a month on people who are consultants and copywriters and strategists and different marketing techniques. We do direct mail. We do a lot of social media. So I don't know. I don't know what's working. And I said, so what would it be worth to you to have your finger on that pulse of your business and know what is working and what's not? He said, well, it'd be worth at least $10,000 or $15,000 to me. And I'm like, of course, because if you're spending that much money, he's spending that much money every month. Whether you're spending that every month or every year, if you don't know what is working and what's not working, then it's like you're taking $100 bills and lighting them on fire. So getting this piece in place, and we worked on a whole strategy in the program to set up different ways to monitor the marketing controls, how to monitor the financial controls. I spent the first 4 years of my business, I had no idea which programs were profitable and which ones weren't. I didn't even know how much it cost to deliver them because I had outsourced it. And looking back, I was completely naive, but I didn't know any better. And then one day, we were working on designing a new program, and the person I was working with said, well, how much does it cost to deliver that one? I said, I don't know. She's like, I think it's time you find out. I'm like, I think you're right. And so from that point on, I've always looked at what my profit line is in each of my programs. So I know, is this a loss leader that makes sense because I'm bringing in wonderful new clients in other programs, or is it a dead horse and I need to let it go because it's not really serving my business? So that's number four, feedback mechanisms. Now, number five is one more thing about feedback mechanisms. Now, I'm not going to talk about any names here, but there is a very, very big company that is marketing-oriented. And one of the things that is a huge challenge for them is they don't have the feedback mechanisms in place, particularly around customer input. And what's happening is, again, they're in that trap of being marketing-centric, and they focus a lot of time and energy on getting new cash flow in the door. And what's happening is that as fast as they're growing, they're probably losing more than 50% of the clients they're bringing on because they don't really stay connected to the customer input, and that's not necessarily been connected to the values of what's important to them. They are now facing really huge PR challenges in the industry. They have massive backlash right now about, you know, the people who are leaving, and they're very angry and uncomfortable and mad about what's happened. And so, you know, bad PR is way, way ineffective for your marketing campaigns. Once you start getting bad press, it's like a little viral bug that just goes off and kills people's trust and their rapport with you. So one of the other pieces about feedback mechanisms I think is really important here is you've got to have a way to stay connected to customer input. And if they're unhappy, and I'm not saying if one person's unhappy, I'm saying when you got masses that are unhappy and they're leaving in droves, you need to slow down and figure out what's not working. It's a very expensive way to do business to focus only on the marketing and not have the proper strategies in place or not have the right value proposition in place to keep the clients that you have. As a matter of fact, I think I read somewhere, Del, that I don't have the statistic right in front of me. I should go look it up. But it was something like 30% of your revenue potential comes from sustaining the clients you have. So if you're missing that, you're actually losing 30% of your revenue to, you know, clients that probably would have happily paid you to stay in your programs if you were making them happy. Pretty scary, huh?
Pretty scary, yeah. And I mean, we just know from business training that it's much more economic to continue keeping customers happy than to acquire a new customer. It's just,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And not only that, but happy customers like to buy more.
Yeah.
I have to tell you that most of my business comes from clients I already have because once they experience what I do, they love it so much they want more. They want to know other places that they can deepen their learning. So I know that at least 50% of my revenue comes from happy clients who are already in one of my programs and want more.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's my job to make sure I do everything I can to take really good care of the clients I have because I love them, I adore them, I make them successful, and it's a great win-win outcome. So when you understand that, that's part of your value systems. Here's how this all starts to come together. Then you create, you have the culture of taking care of clients. You hire people that are already on board with that, and they understand that's your job. Your job is to make clients happy. Your job is to take care of problems as soon as they happen, whatever it is. So that's how this starts to tie together. Now, let me tackle number five because I know we got a ton of questions coming in. Number five is to have strong cash infusion strategies. Now, again, this may seem like an easy thing to tackle. Most people get that, and it's like, duh. But what I found is that most people, especially if you're a service professional or you are a service-based business or you're an information-based business, we see this as credit cards or self-funded growth, meaning if I sell more, I have more money to grow my business. Just take that in for a minute and think about it. What do? Do you fund it on your credit cards or do you fund it by trying to sell more? My guess is you're doing one of those two things.
Mm-hmm.
When I did the CEO Factor retreat, what I did was I put together a very intriguing set of cash infusion strategies that most entrepreneurs and business owners don't even know exist. And this cash infusion strategy is really where that CEO thinking starts to come in. And by the way, I don't mean a CEO like a Fortune 500, like you sit in a corner and tell people what to do. I'm talking about really starting to get you're the chief entrepreneurial officer, you're the visionary, you're the lifeblood of the business. But when you start to think from that perspective and you pull yourself out of, you know, being the coach or the consultant or the entrepreneur who's full of creativity, and you start to think strategically, you have a whole new plethora of opportunities that reveal themselves to you. So some of the types of things that you would look at in cash infusion, and you know, like I said, we talked about this a lot in the retreat, was things like, how are you managing the cash that's coming in? Do you maybe need to look at some more advanced cash management strategies receivables management? If you have big receivables, you could really benefit from looking at some factoring opportunities or some financing opportunities. Some people are really in that growth to maintenance phase, and they want to capitalize their business differently. So we looked at all the different types of ways to get an investor involved. There's things that you don't even know that people do to get investors on board that's not the traditional, like a venture capitalist who is going to want a big chunk of your business. You can even start to look at partnering arrangements where a partner comes in with the cash, you become the expert, and you blend and meld your expertises and, you know, move it to marketplace. So there's a lot of different ways to look at getting cash infusions. If you're just in the, I need another credit card or I got to sell a lot to get past this hump, you're limiting your ability to get massive traction in your field. So I just like to give people new ways to think about it. You may want help trying to figure it out for yourself, and that's fine. That's what coaches are for. You can get a mentor or, you know, tap into one of the programs that are being offered to support you in that. But absolutely don't close the door. Be open to new ideas. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I don't know if you guys have ever read John Maxwell. John Maxwell has written a lot of leadership books, and one of the things he always says is that a leader who thinks they know everything is no longer a leader. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
A leader who thinks they know everything is no longer a leader. Because leaders are constantly scouring the world for new information and new ideas, and they know it's important to invest in things that are going to cause them to get out of their comfort zone and challenge their thinking. So I love that.
Whoa, that was quite an extensive explanation. There's just a lot. There's a lot in all of that, Melanie.
People are probably going to want to listen to this a few times. Huh?
Yeah. I mean, I even want to listen to it again. and one of the big questions that comes up for me, just because I know that in this community there are a lot of service professionals, coaches, holistic practitioners. What can people do? Like, let's say if they're in this solo phase still, because this mindset shift that you're talking about the CEO mindset shift, is huge. What can people do right now, even if they don't have, like, you know, staff? What can they do to shift to this mindset?
You know, I think a part of it is just recognizing where you're getting in your own way. And part of what I talk about in all this is recognizing where you're the bottleneck. You know, we become the bottleneck, A, because we're really, you know, hyper-focused on doing it alone because we maybe don't have a scalable business, so the business can't really grow any bigger than just us. We are the only ones that can make decisions or move things forward. We don't hire properly, so we tend to make really bad choices for hiring, and then we end up micromanaging people to get what we want done. We tend to not recognize where the real opportunities for growth are in our business. So mm-hmm. we don't invest right. And this goes back to what's killing our businesses. Again, if everything you do is investing in marketing because you're drinking the Kool-Aid and you're like, okay, I got to like buy more marketing, and it's like all you got to do is market my business,
yeah.
Well, then you're going to be stuck. Because you can never get all the marketing done yourself. It's like impossible. You've got to know how to, you know, use the leverage piece to get all the marketing done that needs to get done. And secondly, we've already covered the fact that marketing alone is not going to let you sustain anything bigger than six, you know, you can't sustain something six figures or beyond if all you're doing is marketing. You're going to grow it. You're going to spend a lot of money. You're going to have a lot of stuff to do, and you're going to bring in all these great people, and there's no place for them to kind of anchor in because you don't have the other pieces of your business running smoothly. So, you know, I think that's a big part of it is you got to shift out of thinking marketing-centric. You've got to shift out of thinking, I am a coach, I am a consultant, I am a whatever, I am this expert, and start thinking, hey, if I'm the CEO of a multimillion-dollar business here, what am I going to do to strategically leap forward? Because when you think small, you take small steps.
Mm-hmm.
When you think big, you take big steps. And you got to know when to do both, by the way. It's not always time to leap. Sometimes it's time to just, you know, be in maintenance mode and sustain what you have. As a matter of fact, for a lot of people that were really smart over the last couple of years and had a great business proposition for this bad economic time, they're in maintenance mode. They're not creating new stuff. They're just kind of waiting out the storm. For people that, you know, weren't in that place, they've been scrambling, and they've found it's really tough to kind of turn the tides right now.
Yeah, definitely. So one of the things that you talked about, this scalable business model,
mm-hmm.
how do you know if you've got a scalable business model?
Well, you know, a scalable business is, like I said before, is something that can grow bigger than just you, and it also has the ability to be replicated. So if you have a business that counts on you to do everything in it, or you are the work product, you are the one that delivers everything, you don't really have a scalable business. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. Some people want to stay where they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want, if what you're doing is so important that you want to get it out to the masses, if you want to grow bigger than like kind of a low six-figure business, then we've got to start looking at what scalable could mean to you. And there's a lot of different opportunities there's something like 10 or 15 different models. You know, I go through them in depth in the I actually have some audio recordings from that CEO Factor Retreat, and I go through this in depth because I feel like every person on this planet has the capacity, I'm sorry, not every person, but every business owner has the capacity to find a business model that is really suited to deliver not just the financial outcomes, but also will deliver the lifestyle that they want and set them up for the legacy they want to leave behind. So picking the right type of business model is really important. And so you may have a business that you love and you're not quite sure how to make the shift, so we would start to look at, all right, so what are the different business models that are more scalable, and how might we create that roadmap between where you are now and where you want to be? You might actually recognize that you could start to monetize some of your knowledge and package it in a way that other people could produce. That's the easiest way. You might actually have a certification program or a licensing of a capability that you don't even know you have. One of the things when I worked with a very well-known coach a few years ago, and one of the first things we did was we designed her certification program. Now, it took her 2 years to act on it because she had some other stuff she needed to handle first, mm-hmm. but she literally had a beautiful, amazing piece of knowledge in her head, and she didn't realize how much power there was in creating ways for other people to teach it on your behalf. Mm-hmm. It's like you can literally go from six figures to multiple millions by having other people take advantage of a way to replicate your knowledge and teach it to the world. So it's one of the fastest ways to ramp up certification, licensing. You know, some people may have the right bandwidth for franchising. So that's another piece of it. There's other strategies as well. You know, maybe you want to keep control over everything and you want to start to bring up a team underneath you that is going to execute. I had a client for many years where he had a service-based business, and he was never going to deliver at all, but he had one guy that delivered the service, and he was always on the out there working with them. And I'm like, at what point are you going to get the guys on board so that you can go back and lead the company? So we built him up a team of 10 guys, and then he was freed up to start doing more of the running of the business, and his business went from, you know, being in the high five figures to being in the very high six figures within a year and a half. So those are all types of scalable business models. Now, there's one caveat. I think it's really important that we put this out there. There is not one cookie-cutter approach to this. I don't believe in telling you that if you go replicate your knowledge and make information products that you're going to be a millionaire, because that may not be the right model for you based on your culture, your values, your skills and strengths, and your lifestyle goals. I like to figure out who you are and what's important to you, and then create a roadmap towards the business that's going to deliver a really amazing business experience for you that gives you everything you want. I believe in customization, and that's just me. I know it's not the most popular approach out there with other mentors because they want you to believe that if you tap into their program and you follow their, you know, the 1,000 people in their program, you'll get it. I think it takes getting a little bit of one-on-one time and making sure you've really got it nailed down to you. So just saying.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking about this in the series, you know, how valuable blueprints and maps are, and yet at some point, you know, you've got to go off the map and you've got to bring through what's really you.
And I think that's where we tie the consciousness part together,
yeah.
Adele, is that I think when you're a conscious business owner, you have to be in complete alignment. You're everything that's important to you and is your radar in life has to be integrated in your business or it gets sabotaged and it just doesn't perform.
Yeah, it just because you're building on a shaky foundation, again, that growth foundation step that you're talking about in your five-step elements for these six- and seven-figure businesses. So, great. Let's take a couple of questions from folks before we continue. We've got one question. I don't know who it's from because they didn't write their name. Can you give us some examples of the tools you use to get feedback on your business?
Yeah, well, again, if you could say what type of feedback you're looking for, are you looking for feedback? Let's see if they'll answer this question so I can give a better answer. Can you tell me which feedback loop you're talking about? Are you talking about the customer, the marketing, or the finance? So let's see if they can give us that back.
Okay, so clarify that question a little bit more, which aspect of your business you'd like some feedback on, and Melanie will gladly give you some tools.
Okay, one.
Or at least one, yeah.
Yeah.
Ruth Ellen from Jacksonville, Florida. When is the best time to get an investor?
You know, I don't know that there is a best time, but there are different times that work for different types of investors. My understanding, and having, you know, talked to so many people that have worked in this industry, is that if you are going to truly go out and get venture capital or an angel investor, they will typically not talk to you at the seed stage. You have to prove out your idea to some degree. You've got to prove out that it will make money and that the market will respond to it before they will give you venture capital. Now, that isn't the complete rule of thumb. There will be times if you have a really, really great idea that you will be able to get some funding, but you have to have a solid business plan, and it's got to be so innovative and so, like, well thought out that they go, oh, my gosh, if I don't fund this, I'm going to lose out on the best investment opportunity on the planet. So I do know people that have secured that type of funding. The best time is when you know that you have a really great growth opportunity, but you recognize that you don't have the funds to really take action on it properly. And rather than doing things out of desperation, you want to do things out of strength. And so that would be a great time to start opening the doors to investors. Now, you do really want to do your research, because all different investment strategies have all kinds of strings attached. There are some really, you know, dicey areas when you start to deal with venture capitalists and private investors. You need to really understand what's on the table in terms of, you know, they may ask you for 49% share of your company. So you just have to really know what's at stake there. And again, if you've got a lot of questions about it, that is something that I covered in the CEO Factor Retreat that might help start you in the right direction. The audios from that program are really powerful. You can also do a lot of research on the Internet and get great information, too.
Yeah. And I just want to remind folks that the bonus page, which is where Melanie's bonus is located, is in your membership area under the My Account area. You'll see a link for that, VIP bonuses, and it's there, and you can grab that. So this person clarified it. She wants, or he wants, feedback from the customer.
You know, there's a couple of things you can do, and it really depends on your business. This is where I kind of go into that customization piece, but just a couple of general ideas. One of the clients that I worked with, we designed a feedback loop for her where when she was 30 days done with a, or you know, somewhere between 15 and 30 days, she would send them a SurveyMonkey type assessment and ask them how happy they were with the outcome, and is there anything that they could have done to improve. Another thing you can do is you can have someone on your team call and ask them. And part of the reason why you may want to have somebody else do this is because you might actually get better feedback if they're not talking to you, if you were the deliverer. If you have someone on your team delivering, it doesn't really matter who does it. You may personally want to do it or have someone on your team do it. When I worked for Motorola, we actually used this where we would do two things. One, we would give our client a survey when we wrapped up our project. We would ask them to complete it for us. And if they didn't, then we had a third-party company that would call them and go through the survey if we hadn't heard back from them. And, you know, we got great feedback from our clients, and they were so really, most of them were really happy to give it, because if they got a great job done, they wanted to honor the person. And if they didn't have a great job done, trust me, they wanted to tell you about it. So those are a couple of ideas for you.
Yeah, great. Melanie, I know we're already coming to the close, and I wanted to see, folks, this is just, there's just so much information here, and I can't possibly see how we can navigate this arena by ourselves. So there are going to be some of us that are ready to play and explore this. So for those folks who want to explore and want to know more of how they can actually implement and start creating a business that's more aligned and that sets them up for growth, where can you point them to next?
Well, you know, I think one of the most powerful things that I could do to support you right now at this stage of your journey, particularly if you're in that startup phase and you're moving into growth, or you're in growth moving into, you know, maintenance, and you may be in maintenance and you may be really looking for some answers as to how do I really recharge my business. One of the things that I can do to support you is give you that new lens, that new set of glasses to start to view the opportunities with new energy and new vitality and really with proven ways to grow beyond the early six figures. And I love this process because, let me tell you, if I'm going to deliver it to you one-on-one, we're going to spend about $15,000 minimum together. But having the opportunity to do this in-person retreat with people and record it was brilliant because now I have a way to give that roadmap to you and not, you know, it's not something you have to invest $15,000 unless you want to hire me to customize it with you, and we can definitely talk about that. But here's the location of it. It's at www.theceofactor.com/roadmap. And what you will find there is you will find the set of audios from the event, and the audios are something that I believe you should listen to over and over and over again. If you're in the car all the time, if you go to the gym, or you like to just listen to stuff at night, or when you travel, or how whatever your strategy is, trust me, I listen to audio stuff all day long. I constantly infuse this thinking into my head over and over and over again, because when I'm wanting to shift, I know that's the fastest way to do it. Now, it also comes with a couple of supporting tools, one of which is there's a whole library of resources that I designed to help people implement this. So there's some specialty tools like the feedback controls and, you know, how to evaluate if somebody's on your team and they should be off. So there's all kinds of complimentary tools that you'll have access to with it. And I also am including a 30-minute consultation with you because I told you already I'm really big on helping you customize this. I want you to have the customization, not just think, okay, I got to figure this out on my own. And I charge, you know, $500 for those consultations. So I'm including that because I really want to support you in the implementation. And, Adele, I've also arranged for the first week to get everybody a $100 discount on it because they're a part of your program. So if you use the word cash at checkout, C-A-S-H, it's going to take $100 off the investment. So it's a $397 investment, much more affordable for most of us than $15,000. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, again, you'll get the $100 off for the first week.
Well, that's fantastic. Very generous. Thank you so much, Melanie.
You're welcome.
That is a wonderful offer. And, you know, when you were going through those elements, I was like, whoa, there's just so much here, especially, you know, it may seem like that, especially that one step, that growth foundation. I think that's one thing that we get when we get really excited with our vision, that we kind of just like kind of gloss over that and jump into just, you know, diving into actually delivering our services or our programs and our products, and we forget. I know that for me, I need to revisit that because really aligning your values and your vision and your lifestyle and your legacy are really, really key. And because at some point, if you're just, you know, wiped out from your business, you're not going to be able to grow it.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah. The wipeout and the burnout is what gets in most people's way. So when you're disconnected, you start to feel, or if you're out of alignment, you start to feel like your business is work.
Yeah.
When you're in alignment, your business feels like play.
Yeah. Yeah, so it sounds like you've got a beautiful program, wonderful resources, a great offer, a wonderful and generous discount for the community, and totally within the reach of most people, I do believe. And so I really want to thank you for being at the Conscious Business Telesummit, sharing so much of your expertise with us. And I wanted to thank everyone on the call for being here today also. Thank you, Melanie.
All right. Thank you. And I'm glad you all joined us today.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.